So we've been talking about happiness for the last several weeks, and talking about rethinking happiness because, as we've been finding out, maybe we've got some things a little backwards. But the reason I was just asking you about your favorite entertainers, comedians, people you find funny is I think those guys are the best ones, those stand-up comedians are the best ones at holding the attention of a large crowd and just you know, some, they're just artists, they're just experts in the pacing, in the storytelling and the timing of different punchlines and the momentum of you know, just you know, carrying and almost manipulating emotion, you know, and kind of building to a crescendo and then starting over. And some of these guys, I would probably say of all those guys, besides Groucho, Jimmy Kimmel is probably my favorite guy. I just love when he hosts the show. I mean, he's just, I know. And the thing is, all these guys had a team of writers. I mean, they've got like all these guys coming together, help, you know, crafting jokes. You think when Jesus gave his Sermon on the Mount, you know, it was like, do you think he went up to some of the disciples, you know, and said, hey, anybody got an idea for a good opening? You know, help me out here, you know, or, you know, and all these other guys got, you know, they're always the headliner, but they've got, you know, at least one or two other guys that come out and warm up the crowd, you know, and did Jesus ever, you know, can you imagine him, you know, maybe recruiting John the Baptist, you know, kind of, because John the Baptist was kind of his warm-up guy when you think about it, you know, that was kind of his role, kind of the forerunner to the Messiah, you know, and you know, John, go out there and kind of get these guys going, you know, so I don't walk into just a cold room, you know, kind of warm up. But Jesus didn't have any of that stuff. He didn't start off. We were joking last week a little bit about, you know, maybe he should have opened up with, you know, a little joke, a funny story, something funny happened to me on the way to the synagogue, you know, or a rabbi and a priest walking to a bar. Yeah, I don't know, something, you know, but he doesn't need any of that to capture the attention of the multitudes that are gathered, that are drawn to this upstart, itinerant preacher, this young rabbi, you know, 30 years old. That was the very start of a rabbi's career, but you really weren't considered anything until you were well into your 50s. And so you're a rookie. But he, this rookie teacher has been gathering all this attention. And by the end of his talk, the crowds were amazed. When Jesus had finished saying these things, the crowds were amazed at his teaching, for he taught with real authority. He didn't need any crutches. He didn't need any gimmicks. He didn't need any help. He simply spoke to the hearts and the needs of the people that were gathered, and something deep struck inside of everybody, quite unlike the teachers of the religious law were ever able to connect with anyone. Jesus opens this great sermon, and we've been looking at one line each week, these eight lines, this preamble to the greatest sermon ever preached, with a message of happiness. And we're used to hearing what's called the Beatitudes, or the blessings. We're used to hearing the word blessed. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are those who mourn. And we've been talking each week about replacing that word blessed, because what people were hearing was not a churchy kind of spiritual word like we kind of hear when we hear blessed, blessed. They were hearing simply happy. They were hearing this is what happiness is about. And so some weeks we've been reading this together. We haven't done that for a few weeks, and I thought we would, it'd be nice to get us going. Why don't we read out loud together the whole passage with happy in the beginning. So let's read together. Happy are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Happy are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Happy are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Happy are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Happy
are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Happy are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Happy are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Happy are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom
of heaven. All these little phrases is what Jesus wanted everyone to realize. No. I know everyone else has told you in the way you've grown up, in your culture, our culture, that happiness gets attached to wealth and fun and freedom to do whatever you want and seeking pleasure and avoiding pain. But no. This is what a truly fulfilled life experiences. Being poor, being meek, being hungry and thirsty for a relationship with God, showing mercy, having a purity of heart and mind, even being persecuted. And today we're looking at happy are the peacemakers. Happy are those who are really putting themselves out there, really getting. Peacemakers are fools in such ways because for some reason they feel like they can walk into a mess and help clean it up. When it's like, you know what? Most of us just want to leave that alone, because as soon as you try to get in there and break up a fight, you're just asking for it. You're just complicating your life by getting involved with somebody else's mess. But Jesus says, you know what? I know that sounds messy, being a peacemaker, but you are going to create happiness. It's gonna be rough for a while, and we've been talking about how none of these attributes are overnight happiness makers, but they're a lifestyle of sowing and reaping and following the law of the harvest, and we've been talking about that each Sunday. It's that slow over time, tilling the soil, planting the seed, watering the seed, letting it grow, caring for it, pruning it, until someday it bears good fruit. But that never happens overnight. It takes time. It takes cultivation. But a life of cultivating true happiness bears real fruit. And happy are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Interesting word. And which word, you know, it's always kind of confusing because, okay, so our New Testament is all written in Greek, you know, and so we're always kind of looking at Greek terms. But what did Jesus actually speak? You know, he most likely spoke Aramaic and Hebrew. You know, he was Jewish and grew up in a Hebrew culture. You know, by the time everybody's writing this stuff down, you know, many years had passed. It was mostly kept as, you know, as oral tradition, and then it got put down on paper, but it got written in a language for the multitude, you know, for the whole Roman Empire to get passed around, and every, you know, the common language was a form of Greek. It was the Low Greek, by the way. It was the everyman's Greek, the Koine Greek. Not the high Greek, not what the intellectuals used, but the commoners, those who could barely read, you know, just the rank and file working class. But in Hebrew, you know, peace is, it's a big word. And this was probably the word Jesus actually verbally used, was shalom. Anybody have any Hebrew friends and or been part of any Jewish traditions? And you know, shalom is kind of their aloha. You say it coming and going. You know, it's like, you know, when you greet someone, and then when you say goodbye to someone. It's a real awesome all-purpose word that says a lot. But it says much more than our word peace. The common Western definition that we have is simply, you know, an absence of conflict or war. It's, you know, it's everything's settled, everything's good. But shalom goes much deeper than that. Shalom means to be safe in mind, body, or estate. It's a very complete, thorough, comprehensive state. It speaks of completeness, fullness, or a type of wholeness that encourages you to give back, to generously repay something in some way. You're so whole. You've been put together and made so solid that you can't help but feel you have something to offer someone else. And so it's not simply just okay, for the moment everything's okay. I don't you know, I'm not fighting anything. I'm not at tension. It's even more than that. I'm full to the brim, to where I can now give out and offer shalom to someone else. It's still a cool word in Greek. Eirene is it's where we get our. Anybody have any friends named Irene? Irene's kind of fallen out. I mean, that's just not a common name anymore. Everybody trying to fit. Come on, Irene Dunn, Granny from Beverly Hillbillies. Not that many famous Irenes around. I kind of had to. Yeah, that was the best I could come up with. So, but Irene in Greek is. You know, again, says a lot more than our simple English peace, but it means to join, to tie together into a whole. Again, it speaks of a wholeness when all essential parts are joined together. And so it's almost like a machine or something, you know, an engine that's running on old pistons. It's at peace, you know, even though it's moving. All everything's working together. Everything's firing when it should, and so it can fully, you know, operate, you know, completely. That's one way to think about it. And so so peace isn't just even it's more than just that stillness, that absence of conflict. It's an ability to make use of everything that's a part of you in a full whole way. And so. When we think of, when we hear Jesus' words, happy are those who make wholeness for others. It really adds quite a bit. Happy are those that can walk into something that's broken and start pulling pieces together and joining them together and repairing and putting back so life can go on in a fuller, healthier, wholer fashion. So that's pretty attractive. I want peacemakers in my life. I want to be a part of bringing that wholeness to others. What does that take? But I think we don't just walk into being a peacemaker. We've got to really, it's kind of a two-part, almost a cycle of a receive before we are even able to promote peace. We have to receive it. We have to receive peace in order to promote it. And I want to just share a couple of passages, one with the shalom that Jesus spoke of and one with the Irene that Paul used in his letters. But in receiving peace, Jesus offers something very special. And he even says, no, this is special. You're not going to find this anywhere else. Peace I leave with you. This is in kind of those... in one of the settings with his last moments with his closest friends. He says, peace I leave with you, my peace I give you, but I don't give you as the world gives. Do not let your hearts be troubled and do not be afraid. My shalom is very unique. And Paul picks up on this and he says, and the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. This is something from beyond our world, from beyond our ability to muster from just a human condition, this spiritual shalom from God. takes those broken parts of our life and heals them and puts them back together. Now, I want to share a little story with you guys that, to me, is one of the most outrageous examples of seeing that happen in this world. And I don't know if anybody's ever stumbled upon the book Peace Child. Anybody? Okay, so I'm going to ruin this for everybody, but I don't care. If you haven't found this on your own or somehow by now, then you weren't going to find it anyway. And so, but this is one of, but there's no more Christian bookstores around to just like, you know, browse the aisles and stuff. I mean, you would always find Don Richardson's books, you know, Peace Child and Eternity in Their Hearts and Lords of the Earth. I mean, there was always the top three in the mission section. There is no mission section anymore. You know, I guess you can Google Amazon, you know, mission Christian books. But I mean, this has got to be in the top three missionary stories of all time. I mean, it's my all-time, I mean, how are you kidding me? And if I hadn't met Don Richardson in person in college, he came to my church in college, I don't know if I believe that this guy existed. Okay, so him and Carol, so that's them in the early 70s? Late 60s? Early 70s. Doesn't that look like late 60s? Okay, but I think it's like 71 by the time. Okay, but their first son is 7 months. Their first child is like a baby when they land in the jungles of New Guinea. After doing a stint, you know, he was a language specialist, and they felt called to bring the gospel to primitive peoples. And so, and they did, you know, they talk about, they studied to prepare, and they kind of, you know, read all what the anthropologist said about the tribes of New Guinea, and that you're either, they fall into two basic categories. You either got the cannibals, you know, that just eat other people, and, or you have your headhunters. And there's a picture, I'm sorry I didn't get a picture of, like, flesh-eating humans, but, or you got your headhunters. But according to the anthropologists, you never had both cannibals and headhunters. I mean, nobody does that. However, the three tribes that Richardson gets involved in, primarily the Sawi people, anthropologists had never stumbled upon a tribe that's both cannibalists and headhunters. And so he gets in deep. He eventually, Don and Carol raised three kids in these jungles that are, you know, just, I mean, were dysentery and just all kinds of bacteria and floods are just like common issues. I mean, our family shuts down. Like, we just celebrated Christmas a couple days ago with our extended family and cousins because, you know, somebody would get sick. Oh, well, then one, you know, then none of the other families want to, you know, get close, you know, if somebody's sick. So we kept putting off Christmas for like, you know, 2 months, basically, you know, because so till people would get healthy, you know, and we freak out over this and freak out over that. And here these guys are raising their kids in this environment. Anyway, okay, so back to the main story. And so Don and Carol get there, they spend time. He's really good at picking up languages. I mean, and so he breaks down. They've got like 17 tenses for their verbs. I mean, it's complicated. It's weird. And the book goes into some of that detail. But he finally gets a chance where he can communicate the gospel story to this primitive tribe. And they love it. They eat it up. They're all, this is amazing. We love this kind of stuff. Tell us more about Judas. And he's like, wait, well, what? And they're like, yeah, that guy is awesome. And he's like, no, that's, he's the bad guy. Jesus is the, and they're all, Jesus? He's a loser. We eat guys like that for breakfast around here. Literally, we eat guys like that for breakfast around here. And so, and Don Richardson is just flabbergasted that their moral ethical code is so backwards that their heroes are the traitors. Literally, they would read the Revolutionary War and Benedict Arnold, that's the guy. That's who you want to be like. I mean, their Their heroes were the ones that sucked in loyalty. And they even have a term for it. I can't pronounce it. But it's this phrase that speaks of, it loosely translates to fattening the kill, fattening for the kill. And so you play a guy up, you know, hey, we're gonna be friends, and you have him over for a banquet, you know, and you do several of these feasts in their name, and you wait till they're the most comfortable and feeling safe, and that's when you just knife them, you know, and you just turn on him, and he ends up being the main course of the feast. I mean, this was the type of people that Don and Carol, and there were three tribes in this locality that they landed in, that all, you know, this was their way of life. And every day there was violence. It was shocking. And their first year was like, what are we doing? We can't, you know. They were helping, and they became very valued to the tribes because they brought some technology, you know, like some steel axes and things. And they just loved those steel axes, I mean, because now they could, you know, make their bamboo work just a lot more efficient. And so they loved Don and Carol, and they knew that they wanted something good for them. And they just couldn't get it around their heads that Jesus could do anything for them. You know, that's how crazy things were. Okay, so I need to move into some summarizing here. So finally, Don and Carol say, you know what? Maybe we're causing more harm than good. We're just not getting through to these people. Maybe we could spend our time, you know, elsewhere. I mean, they pray, but the tribes, they were like, I mean, because one of their main guys, he got injured in a battle. Don called for an airlift, had him go to a hospital, in a nearby, you know, where they actually had a hospital a few hours away. And the guy came back after being shot with three arrows, and he was alive. And in fact, some other guys were thinking, hey, let's shoot each other with arrows so we can go experience with our friend. I mean, these guys were kind of nuts. And so they knew that they looked at Don Carroll, people could bring their people back to life if hurt. And so they kind of freak out when they hear that the Richardsons are going to move on to another tribe. Plus, they didn't want the other, you know, another side of the island to get what they've had. And so they have kind of a head of council meeting with the three tribes, and they say, look, we've got to make peace. And they have an ancient tradition that at first Don and Carol are shocked by what they think they're about to see. Because all of a sudden they see some fathers running into some huts. And these three tribes, you know, they're not that far away. And so they can see, you know, fathers running into huts and mothers screaming and freaking out because they're running now out of their huts with these infants. You know, and the stories now revolve about these three infants, you know, that are being, you know, that are they're being taken away from their families. They're all, oh no, now what have we done? Child, you know, now they're going to be, you know, doing some sort of child sacrifice ritual or something like that. But what they find out is they have an ancient tradition, and it's binding. If you do this, peace is established between the various tribes. And what they do is they trade kids. They give a child from one of their families to be raised by the other tribe, and they receive a child from that tribe. And they exchange names, and they make promises that are binding. And the name of this ancient ritual is the peace child. And finally, I mean, so Don and Carol are blown away how serious, and they see how this gets tested, you know, because there's a few skirmishes that break out a few weeks later, and they don't retaliate. And stuff that, smaller stuff than that, they would retaliate with, you know, fights and arrows and all kinds of stuff. But they were at peace because of the peace child. And so now, Dawn can say, guys, that's what I've been trying to talk to you about. Jesus is God's peace child. And when they came to understand Jesus in that way, in a way that made sense to them from their own culture, they just all, I mean thousands, I think in like 1 week, 2,500 of the local peoples, you know, embraced Jesus and turned their lives around and received the peace child. And it's just this amazing story that, you know, once we really understand that what God offers us is like something, you know, we can't find it. I mean, his own child given into this world for us to receive and be rebuilt and our brokenness turned into wholeness. Once we embrace Christ that way, we can, now we're filled up. Now we have that shalom to be able to offer others. And when things are unfair to us, just like in these tribes and these skirmishes, you know, these like problems broke out, I was like, no, we're at peace. I can look past that. I'm above that. I'm brimming. I can now give peace out. So sorry if I ruined that story for you. I've gone 3.5 years in neighborhood church and never told a peace child. But you'll probably forget about all the details and stuff. It's still a great read. I mean, it is intense. Not for the squeamish of heart, though. Okay. Jesus has this, let's talk about promoting peace. We've received it. What is this about? There's this weird little passage that Jesus throws out. He's gathered, beyond his 12 disciples, he's gathered 72 followers. And he sent them on a field trip, on a mission, kind of a scouting trip. Before he heads to these towns, he wants to send ahead some pairs of leaders to get people ready for him and promote the peace of the gospel ahead of them. And he says, go, I'm sending you out like lambs among wolves. And I'm telling you, if you've got any peacemaker experience in you, you know that that's what it can feel like. You're going into something with good intentions, with a pure heart, good motives, but man, you can be getting into the middle of a mess. And Jesus says, I'm sending you out like lambs among wolves. Don't take any resources. Go out in a very vulnerable way, not a purse or a bag or even sandals. And do not even greet anyone on the road. Stay focused. And then he says this weird little phrase. When you enter a house, first say peace to this house. Why? It's just so weird. Do you mean like, you know, what's going on there? And he goes on to, in the rest of the passage, you know, kind of give him some more detail about what might happen after that. But I just want to focus on this little phrase where Jesus says to speak peace over a house. And what's going on there? What is, you know, Jesus believes there's a certain power in speaking shalom and saying, and verbally out loud saying, shalom, peace, to a place, you know, or a household, you know, over people. So kind of weird, but this is really weird. And I don't know if you came across an article a while ago, and I've been thinking about it, and I kind of go, nah, it's just too weird. But then I think about it more, and I'm like, well, and then I was kind of, you know, going over stuff this week, and I'm like, well, that kind of, you know, that's kind of weird too. Just like Jesus is like saying, you know, speak peace over this house. There was this Japanese scientist a while ago that was doing these experiments with water and their and how they crystallize when water freezes into ice. And he was looking at the, you know, on a molecular level, what that looks like. And he found, and I don't know, this just might be nuts. But I'm kind of into stuff like this. And I believe in God of miracles and that the physical realm is connected to spiritual reality as much as anything else. And maybe the spiritual reality is even more real than the physical realm that we're caught up in. But he found that water crystallizes in different ways depending on the verbal vibrations that are spoken over the water. This is crazy stuff, right?
No.
But the Jesus stuff's a little crazy too, so let's kind of go with this. So for instance, you say a phrase like, you make me sick, or I hate you, or you're ugly, or something like that. And it forms in this kind of weird blob. I mean, nothing special, almost, you know, kind of thing like that. But you speak prayers of love and peace and goodness. And these water molecules crystallize in these amazing looking patterns. And it's pretty fascinating. And part of the theory is, well, the human body is made up of mostly what? Water. So there's something in the power, the verbal power of prayer, maybe that we're learning, you know, is very important. And it's interesting that, you know, so much of, you know, what the New Testament, you know, talks about and what we see happen are these, you know, Jesus saying things out loud. And the importance of prayer. And, you know, and it's just one more layer of how powerful our prayers can be. Well, take that for what it's worth. Kind of interesting. If you're a skeptic, if you're a cynic like me, in a lot of ways, you know, maybe we can back that around, do some deeper research on it. But I'm going to go with Jesus, nevertheless, that when he says, if you speak peace over someone or a group or a home, powerful things can follow. Well, we're in the season of Lent now. Anybody do anything fun on Ash Wednesday? Anybody do anything fun on Fat Tuesday? But anybody have any Catholic friends going around? It's like, why did everybody choose to clean out the chimneys today? This is so weird. In a lot of the liturgical churches, they have a tradition called passing the peace. And it happens actually between the sermon, the message, and the Lord's table. But I thought it would be fun to challenge ourselves as individuals, as a church family in the season of Lent, you know, leading up to Easter. And I'll follow up when, you know, in our email blast about this. To begin speaking peace to our families, to our schools, to our neighborhoods. And the fun thing about this is nobody even needs to know what you're doing. You don't need to get in anybody's face or space or anything like that. They don't even ever have to know you're speaking peace over them. You're dropping off your kid at their classroom and you're just saying, peace. Shalom. Jesus' peace on you. The peace of God rests on you. May peace be with you. However you want to say it. Speak peace at your workplace. Over your kids when you put them in. I mean, just start speaking peace. Make it a habit. Because you're going to bring God's peace. You're going to promote his ability to bring wholeness. And what's wonderful about this, anybody can talk. But there's power even in our just out loud words. When God calls you to take that next step of actually, you know, getting involved and, you know, kind of more of the details of life, that's great too. But what a great first step to simply speak peace into the lives around us. And know, according to Jesus, and maybe according to Professor or whatever his name was, that something special is taking place. You know, and I'm going to have a certain confidence as I'm doing it in Jesus' name. His power is specifically going to reform and rebuild and reshape brokenness and bring a wholeness, join together parts into a wholeness that need it. So pass the peace this Lent. We've got several weeks to build this habit into our lives and bring God's peace again into our workplaces, our neighborhoods, our schools, our families, as many places as we can. Let's do it right now. I want to say a little prayer, but just turn to the people around you and simply say, peace be with you. Because as Jesus said, he gives us that, and he's saying, now I'm sending you to bring that peace. So take a minute and just simply say to each other, peace be with you. Doesn't that feel good? Something's going on there on a spiritual level, on a molecular level. Lord Jesus, thank you that you offer us your peace that's miraculous, that is life-giving, that is life-changing. And so, Lord, let us be filled with that peace. Let us feel the wholeness that comes from you and your shalom, because we can't find that anywhere else. We need to be filled up with it from you. And so, Lord, fill us up. Bring us your peace. And, Lord, send us out. Let us promote your peace. Let us speak it over many homes, many households, many individuals, classrooms, cubicles, everywhere that we go. And let that be on our hearts this Lent season to pass your peace around. So, Lord, let us be peacemakers. Let us be called children of God. Because we bring your peace into this world. We pray this in your name. Amen. Well, come to his table and feel his peace when you feel called. Love to pray with you and for you in the back of the room.